And we'll get started with the reading for this week. I actually want to start with a kind of a lecture. I mean, a mini lecture, a 5-minute lecture. Don't worry. I mean, I know that I usually talk a lot in these phone calls, but I'm always open to people breaking in with questions and comments, and that's happened sometimes, and that does happen sometimes. But today I want to start at least 5 minutes or so reflecting a little bit about this whole TSK approach and the significance of it, because I think that there's a line at the very beginning of our reading that led me to that reflection, and I wanted to share that with you. So the last paragraph on page 84 is talking about the concerns of the self, which has been a theme that we've been exploring for a while now. It says, as long as such concerns remain foremost, the prospect for transformation suggested by the rapid change characteristic of today's world will go unrealized. And I thought that was very interesting. Usually, when we talk about the way things are in modern society, we talk about the difficulties that our way of life presents for really being able to tune into our experience. You know, everything is superficial. We think that technology can cure everything. There's many more things that we can say. The TSK, TSK approach, you know, it shares some of those concerns, certainly. I mean, those are very real concerns. That's just the way things are. There are problems in our society that you could say no other culture has ever had to face. But there is also something about our culture which is very stimulating, very alive, very dynamic. And that's what this quote points to, you know, the prospects for transformation suggested by the rapid change characteristic of today's world. The idea is that if we took seriously the fact that everything is always changing, then that would suggest that we ourselves can change, that our situation can change, and maybe most fundamentally, that our ways of knowing can change. And so what Rinpoche says here is that possibility is there, is available, and we work with that, we can work with that, but we won't if we continue to hold on as the unchanging center of our experience to the self. And that's the main point that's being made here, I think. And what it suggests is that, you know, there's this dynamic that we can tune into, but in fact, the way we use the dynamic is just to reinforce the self. And, you know, the more things change, there's that nice saying in French, the more things change, the more things stay the same. And that's kind of how our culture works out in practice. But in theory, if we could kind of tune in to the energy, the dynamic, the momentum of change, that would be something very powerful. The reason I wanted to emphasize that is because I think it has something to do with the way that, or let's say with the significance of the TSK vision. Because in other cultures, and I'm thinking now, you know, especially of Buddhism, but it's also true in Western spiritual traditions, and even to some extent in the Western philosophical tradition, there is a sense that Let's see, somebody, whoever just joined us, I think, needs to mute their speaker or something. Okay, let's see. So, in most cultures, there's this sense that there's a higher realm. And that higher realm is available through one method or another. We need to practice, or we need to do something, or we need to develop a certain attitude to enter that higher realm. And in our culture, you know, another way of talking about what's characteristic of our culture, as opposed to other cultures, is to say that we've lost any sense of there being that higher realm. I mean, it's not that we don't have it at all. Some people do, and you know, it tends to be what motivates people to get interested in things like TSK. But there is a very, very strong sense that the only thing that's real is our ordinary experience. You know, what we can sense with our five senses, what we can figure out with logic and reason, and that's pretty much it. There really isn't much beyond that. Lois is asking me to repeat what I just said. I said there's a sense that we have... there is no reality beyond the one that we can contact through our five senses or through the use of logic and reasoning. Those are the tools available to us. Anything else, any other kind of experience that does not have to do with the five senses or is not accessible to reason is suspect and probably not real. I'm not saying that's the only way we understand things, but it's a very, very strong impulse that we have, and I think it's true even for people who think they're open to spiritual things. At a certain point, you kind of hit this skepticism about anything that goes beyond our own direct experience experience in that kind of limited way. Anyway, the point is that TSK says okay. And that's really surprising and unusual in TSK, I think. TSK says, let's just go with our ordinary experience. Let's not look for some higher realm. And within our ordinary experience, we can tune in to a different way of being and knowing, different dimensions or different ways of understanding space and time. That's certainly a part of it. But then fundamentally, there's this sense of a different kind of knowledge. Right? So the knowledge that TSK is interested in is not necessarily, and I hesitated about using that word, let's just say is not, the knowledge that TSK is interested in is not knowledge that leads us into some higher realm. It's a knowledge that's available within our ordinary experience. And in spiritual traditions, you can find some common threads. I mean, that idea gets expressed sometimes, but there's very much the sense in most traditions that you want to be able to transcend our ordinary realm. In TSK, and again, you could say it different ways, but the way I'm going to say it right now is TSK is not so interested in transcendence in the sense of going beyond. TSK is interested in finding out what's going on within our ordinary experience. And then, you know, when we do that, if we can let go of the concerns of the self, or challenge our reliance on the concerns of the self, then we discover a different realm. And so Lois's chat comment here is, isn't that a kind of other or spiritual realm? Well, it is in the sense that it turns out that our ordinary realm is not so ordinary, right? Because I have a lot of background in Buddhism, that reminds me of certain things that are said in Buddhism, where the Buddha will say, for instance, he'll say, there is, you know, when I look at this ordinary realm that we inhabit, I see it as being a perfect Buddha realm. And that's kind of what TSK says. I don't want to draw the connection with Buddhism too closely, but you know, TSK says if we look within ordinary experience and we are ready to rely on a different way of knowing that is activated within our ordinary experience, then everything is different. Everything is transformed. And it's very, very fundamental. And yes, you can make connections to spiritual teachings. But there's that particular focus is something that's really characteristic of TSK. And I think really, number one, I think it's very beautiful, or maybe the way to say that is it appeals to our Western sensibilities or our modern sensibilities. It's beautiful in a way that we can appreciate. You know, if you're looking at traditional spiritual teachings, in a way you have to adopt a different aesthetic sense sometimes as to what's really beautiful. But TSK is, you know, reveals the beauty of knowledge, if you want to say it that way, in a way that is really consistent with our Western understanding. So that's really fundamentally important. And the other thing about it is not just that it's beautiful, but that it's effective in the context that we really inhabit, in the world that we really inhabit. Because, and again, I don't want to say too much about spiritual disciplines. I mean, I don't want to make the contrast too strong, but ordinarily, you know, if you want to train yourself in a spiritual discipline, that requires a very strong discipline. And the discipline that TSK requires, and I think it does require discipline, but the discipline that TSK requires is quite different. It's not that kind of setting aside everything else and focusing on the one thing that's important, the kind of one-pointed discipline that you see in a lot of meditative traditions. It's the discipline that stays aware, stays awake, stays alive within whatever is happening. And so that kind of takes us back to the notion of TSK and in connection with this rapid change, you know, the momentum of change in our world. Because our world is changing so quickly, it makes it that much more difficult, I think, to slow things down or to enter the kind of meditative state in which we are not caught up in that momentum of change. TSK at least suggests the possibility that we can find we can find our way into this other way of knowing that's based on inquiry within the momentum. As long as we're ready to ask certain kinds of questions, that's the TSK discipline is being ready to question everything in our experience, not in order to prove that it's false, but simply in order to understand what's going on. So that's my little lecture. That's what I wanted to say at the beginning of the class today, because I think it's really always interesting and useful to be asking yourself, you know, what is it about TSK that sets it apart? And another way of asking that question for those of you who have read Rinpoche's other books and studied his other teachings, another way to ask that question is to say, why did Rinpoche decide to, you know, why did he write TSK? You know, it's not because he thinks Buddhism is somehow inadequate. But I think there is a sense that he has that TSK is a teaching for our times. And this, even though it's just this one sentence that I've been discussing, I think it grows out of the whole program that we've been doing. We recognize that there really is an alternative way of proceeding, and that's what TSK is exploring, and that's what I wanted to call attention to. Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
The couple of lines you read out seems to go a step beyond saying that it's possible for us to be present in whatever ordinary reality is.
Mm-hmm.
But that there might actually be something in the energy of the runaway train that could feed us, that could be like a force of transformation. Do you think that's possible? I mean, I always think of our society being like a runaway train, and how can we be present rather than feeling the wind in our face? Like, what is that energy that we could tap into?
Yeah, no, it's a good way of putting it. It's a good image, and it's a good question. It relates to a question that Lois asked here in the chat section at the beginning that I haven't addressed. I mentioned the retreat at the beginning, and Lois asks, how will the retreat differ from the class? And the answer to that, I think, has to do with the fact that if you're doing TSK, you want to be able to do two things, it seems to me. One is, you do want to be able to focus in on your experience in a way that intensifies your ordinary form of experiencing. And that's what retreats are about. A retreat literally means a withdrawing from the world, right? And the world that we're withdrawing from is this runaway train world. So in a retreat, everything I just said doesn't count. No, I don't really mean that, but a retreat is different from the emphasis that I was just using or developing. Because in a retreat you say, okay, we really are going to take time to investigate more deeply. And to really maybe change our experience. So in practical terms, that means that in a retreat, you spend more time doing practice. You spend more time sitting there and really investigating, going into something for, you know, half an hour or so, or whatever it is. And then you do it again, and then you do it again, maybe with different practices. And so that's one aspect of TSK, and I actually do think it's a very important aspect of practice in TSK. But the other aspect has to do with working within the momentum and using the momentum. And Rinpoche actually uses that image. I think it's in Love of Knowledge. He may use the image of the train. I think he does. But I know he uses an image of an airplane. And he says, you know, it's as though you tried, as though you thought your job was to stop this airplane that's flying through the air at 700 miles an hour, you know. And you can't possibly do that, as an individual, let's say. And then he says, but, you know, you could be in the plane. And then you don't have that job anymore. You don't have to worry about it. You could just be investigating where you are. And I can't remember whether he says you could be the pilot. I don't know if that image would work exactly. But in any event, you don't have to try to fight against this tremendous momentum of our culture and society. Now, how can you draw on it? That's an interesting question, and I don't really have an answer that I can put into words, I don't think. I think maybe a good way to think about that and to kind of explore experientially is to say that the momentum of our culture, the momentum of our technology, is really a part of us. And so we need to find that part within ourselves, that aspect of the way our minds works that is a reflection of that tremendous commitment to things always changing. And exactly how we do that, well, that's a part of the inquiry. I don't have a better answer. Lois is asking, is that like Aikido or Tai Chi, or, you know, relating with the energy? Yeah, I think it is. or at least that's a good analogy. In other words, you use the energy of the other person. Or maybe you don't say use in Aikido, I don't know. But you let that energy be a part of what's going on. And yes, we have the energy of our times to draw on. And it's an incredible energy. So maybe there's a real intensity in that energy that we can draw on. Okay, so there's another phrase which I mentioned in the orientation for this week that I think ties into this, because the question is, well, let me just give you the phrase. It's still on that first page, at the very bottom of page 84. He says, well, what's the alternative? Right? And he says the alternative is clear. We can take responsibility for knowledge. So that kind of sounds straightforward enough, but I want to really ask what that means, to take responsibility for knowledge, and why that's the alternative to being concerned with the self, and then, you know, ask why would we want to do that, and a little bit how we can do that. Well, that's a lot for the next few minutes, but let's kind of go with it. So the reason it's an alternative is because, and this is, I have to say this quickly, but I think we can tune into it on the basis of the experience we've already had. The reason it's an alternative is because knowledge is not about the self. It's not that knowledge is opposed to the self. It's that knowledge is more fundamental than the self. If you tune in, you could say, to what's going on in the situation that you inhabit right now, or the situation that you inhabit whenever you decide to tune in. You know, maybe you're waiting in line at the post office. Whatever it is, if you tune in to the situation that you're involved in, the self is just a part of that situation. And it's not as though you can point to an object. You know, one of the things we haven't really talked about, I don't think, in this program, because it's not developed so much in love of knowledge. But one of the things Rinpoche talks about is the field of a situation. When you inhabit a world, or when you inhabit a story, you inhabit the whole field. And the reason that that's significant is that it takes you away from the emphasis on objects and certainly also the subject. You know, we tend to say, if you ask someone to describe a situation, or, you know, say, you know, just open your eyes, look around, now tell me what you see, people will answer in terms of, I see this thing over here and that thing over here, you know, I see the phone, I see the computer, I see the building outside, and so on. But if your focus is on the field as a whole, then the question isn't quite appropriate, or at least you can go ahead and ask that question, but maybe it's not the most interesting question. What you want to ask is, you know, what are the forces and energies and orientations, you might say, that are moving through a field, the field of your experience. And one of those forces, the kind of central dynamic energy, is the self. And you know, maybe that gives us some clue as to this question we looked at just a minute ago about how can you tune into the energy, you know, of our culture, where everything's moving so quickly. But whether that's helpful or not, the self is available as part of the field. It's not so much that there's this thing in the center called the self. It's more that in the whole field of your experience, the flavor of the self pervades it. So the self's very important. You know, it's like the most pervasive flavor. It's like if you make a soup, you know, it has a pervasive flavor, and then it has all these different seasonings. and the pervasive flavor of the soup is the stuff. So it's important in that sense. It's very fundamental. But it's not the soup, you know. It's just the main ingredient, you could say, but the soup has been put together, and the soup in this case, the soup's not a good image at all, because soups are kind of murky, usually. You know, they're thick and hard to see through. But the pervasive flavor of the field is knowledge. Or, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say pervasive flavor, that was the self. The field itself is made up, you could say, or is constituted by knowledge. And when we take responsibility for knowledge in that sense, we turn away from the self. That's why it's the alternative. You know, we don't pretend that the self doesn't exist. We're very aware of the self as being this pervasive element in the field. But we're not committed to it. We're not identified with it. We're looking at the level of this deeper knowledge. And Rinpoche says one more thing about that that I think is really helpful right here. Actually, I'm going to quote something now that is just above, it's the sentence before the reading. So, I'm sorry, that was a trick. Rinpoche is talking about the self relying on models for knowledge. And that is a theme that we've talked about at different times. He says, if we rely on conventional knowledge and we're doing our inquiry on the basis of conventional knowledge, then we will rely on models. Right? And because that's how the self has to know. The self is not... The self is not the same as knowledge. The self draws on knowledge, but it has to do it in a specific way, and that's by developing models and then knowing on the basis of its models. And we've looked at that. So if we rely on conventional knowledge, then we rely on models. And models set limits, models set boundaries, models involve positions and conditions. Those are the kinds of things we've been looking at. And he says when we're looking in that way, and I'm quoting this sentence right above our reading, what we find in our explorations may be only the echo of what was available to be known at the outset. And that has to do with taking responsibility for knowledge. The self relies on the echoes of knowledge. The self shapes the echoes of knowledge into models. And then that becomes the knowledge that's available to us. But if we take responsibility for knowledge itself, then we don't rely on just the echo. It's kind of a simple way of saying it, but I think that that's important. There's a deeper kind of knowledge that comes forth. And Rinpoche says that at the very beginning, or very top, I should say, of page 85, which is about as far as we're going to get this morning, he says, let's see, he's talking about change. Let's look at the very bottom of page 84. Once we take responsibility for knowledge, he says, the concerns of the self no longer dominate. The potential range for change itself changes, which goes back to the question of change and the momentum of change that we were discussing, transforming not only the contents and the positions that knowledge supports, but also the way in which knowledge functions. We can investigate how knowledge arises and penetrate more deeply the nature of human knowing. So this is probably clear to people already, but it goes right to the heart of TSK inquiry when he says we can investigate how knowledge arises. In English, there's a certain ambiguity there. If you ask how did something arise, you might be asking for the cause. Like, how did the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico happen? And the answer to that question is you know, there was an explosion and the regulatory agencies didn't do their job, or, you know, so we tell a story, we give all the causes. But that's not what we're talking about here. When we say we can investigate how knowledge arises, it's very simple. We just look at knowledge arising and see how that happens. You know, it's like saying to yourself, how do I walk? You know, you could try to explain how you walk, but that's not going to be very helpful. If you want an answer to that question, you just start to be aware of what's going on while you're walking. And that's the kind of how that is involved when we ask the question, how does knowledge arise? So, I actually, just as we were getting ready to start this class, just as I was making the phone call, I guess, I thought, you know, this is an interesting example, so I'm going to give it. And the reason I'm giving it is because, you know, at this point, your job is to be asking that kind of how question, is to be looking at how knowledge arises, or looking in a broader sense of what's going on in your experience. So if we just look at the, just to give that example, you know, I spend a good part of the morning, I have a lot going on right now, I'm busy with a number of different things, and so I spend a fair amount of the morning thinking about those things, making some notes to myself, you know, like that. And then as it got to be a few minutes before the class, and I was reviewing the notes that I'd taken that I'd be using in this phone conversation, things shifted. You know, and in a sense, it was like entering a different field, right? Or the field itself shifted, however you want to say that. And a different set of questions and concerns started to engage me, started to become interesting. And they were questions that were related to this reading and this class and TSK. And that was, you could say, a kind of arising of knowledge. Certain kinds of connections began to manifest. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that I started to know more or that, you know, that I suddenly stumbled upon this field of knowledge that I'd forgotten about. It was that the knowledge that was available in the situation as a whole just started to reconfigure itself in terms of what we were going to be discussing. But just an example. It's just an example of how you can look at knowledge operating and without relying on the ordinary belief that it's always the self that does the knowing. Mm-hmm. What we're looking at is a knowing that is deeper than the self, that manifests in the situation. And in part, it's the kind of thing I was just talking about, certain kinds of ideas and so on became available, sort of started to emerge because the focus of what was happening was shifting. The focus of what was shifting was, the focus of what was going on was related to this class. You know, the time had come for this phone call. So all that shifted. So that's one level. There is actually a deeper level as well, and that is everything that manifests in our experience is given to us by knowledge or is given to us as experience. And I think we talked about this last week. The world that we know or the experience that we have is always not only informed by knowledge, but it's constituted by knowledge. You know, there's no such thing for us as a world that is not a known world or a world in which knowledge is active. It just has to be that way, or it's not there for us. And That's such a simple point that it's hard to say, but it's really fundamental. Well, that's what your practice should be, I think. Rinpoche says at the very end of the reading we had, the very end of this chapter, he describes TSK, or he describes what we're talking about as the first manifestations of a remarkable vision. And what's remarkable about the vision is in large measure also what's most simple about the vision, and that is that knowledge is always available. Not because it's sort of hiding in the corner and we haven't known where to look, but because because that's what experience is. It is knowledge. It can't be anything else. There has to be a knowing in every moment of experience. So of course knowledge is always available. So it's a remarkable vision because it's such a simple vision, but it's one that we somehow seem to do our best to suppress. So next week is our last session. I'm going to have to be careful with the time next week because I'll be involved in the middle of some other things. I'll have to make sure to stop pretty much on time next week. As a reminder again, with the retreats coming up, and we'll talk about this a little next week, I guess. I haven't thought yet about what we should, how the TSK program should continue in the fall, but I'm certainly expecting that it will continue in the fall. Okay, that's it. Thank you very much. We'll talk next week.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.